all day Friday.
Alright, so we're gonna start covering the heart. So, embryonic development of the heart, so week two, somites have not fully developed yet. Towards the head, you're gonna have ectoderm that's gonna migrate down and engulf or surround the endoderm. And the lateral plate mesoderm is gonna contain cells that will become cardiomyoblasts. So cardiomyoblasts, heart muscle formers. So they're gonna form the heart muscle. So cardio, heart, myo, muscle, blast form. Anterior to the gut tube. So this is actually on the anterior surface of where your esophagus ends up being. So real quick side note, you're what's called a deuterostome first. You start pooping before you start eating. Okay? Just throwing that out there. Okay? Your second hole forms first. That's where deuterostome comes from. Alright, so the gut tube is forming. As the gut tube is forming, it's making its way up. And your heart is forming. So lateral plate mesoderm is going to split and eventually is going to surround and develop the heart, or surround the developing heart to create the pericardial cavity. So generally, I'm not suggesting you have this memorized, but you should generally understand it, okay? Generally understand that when the heart is forming, if you notice, it is actually forming. This is one of those things where I'm gonna hint to evolution again. But it starts off being linear in structure and then it folds over on itself, and that is where you start to get the two different circuits. Okay? Kind of cool when you look at a fish heart and a single circuit and it looks a whole lot like that. Okay? And then compare it to where we're at now as far as heart evolution. And then compare that also to the crocodilian heart and then back to the bird. Okay, so comparison of heart development is kind of interesting. Alright, so further development. So you have two cardiac tubes that are going to fuse with a primitive atria and ventricle. As the embryo grows, the heart is going to elongate and bend, forming this S-shaped curve. The atria is going to move superior and the ventricles are going to move inferior. So you are going to have more muscle build up. So more myocardium is going to be built on the ventricles. The interatrial and intraventricular septum are going to subdivide the heart. You have one septum that divides the heart. However, in a developing embryo, there is an opening, okay? That opening is going to allow blood to pass through because the child is depending on the circulation of the mother. This ends up becoming the fossa ovale, okay, in the heart. We'll talk about that structure later. All right, so a gap between the two interatrial septa creates the foramen ovale, which becomes the fossa ovale, okay? It allows blood flow from the right atrium to the left atrium. This bypasses the pulmonary circuit because the child is not breathing, okay? They are suspended in fluid, so they are not actually breathing at this point in their development. They don't breathe until they come out. At birth, this opening closes and the two circuits of the heart are separated. I've had a couple students in the past so far that have had a foramen ovale in a developed teenager. Okay, so they still have a hole through the atria of their heart. Okay, so that foramen ovale for them causes mixing of the blood. Now, why do I get into this? Okay, what's up? No, heart murmur is a little different. This is a structural difference. So this is something that they will feel the difference. Had a student this year who came in and was talking about it. They were talking about how the fact that their foramina valve is still very much open, that they cannot do a lot of athletic sports because of the mixing of blood. Well, let me get into why it's important. So you load up your hemoglobin on one side, okay? You load it up on your pulmonary circuit, and then it crosses over to your systemic circuit, and then you push it out to the system, right? So that makes sure that you have the most oxygen you can and the lowest CO2 you can going out to your system, which gives you a gradient, okay? So that makes it to where, once it hits your system, wherever it's at, carbon dioxide comes in, oxygen goes out of the blood cell, okay? You're out of the blood. So that's generally the way that you have this happening. Now, when you have an open foraminal valve, you've got deoxygenated blood and oxygenated blood mixing. So you are pushing partially oxygenated blood out to your system. So the gradient's not as strong. So that means that oxygen is not gonna wanna move into the cell as fast. And carbon dioxide is not gonna wanna move into the, out of the cell as fast, okay? So that creates a lack of oxygen really fast. So you can run out of oxygen if you have this hole inside your atrium. You can actually run out of oxygen and go into lactic acid fermentation very fast, which means that now you're building up lactic acid when you shouldn't be, okay? So it limits your physical ability to do, okay, whatever it is. There's one student that I've talked to that he counteracted this by being athletic the whole time while he was growing up and just adapting to that. Knowing when he needs to come out of a sport or when he needs to move out or when he needs to stop running, okay, was something that he learned over time, and he's developed a longer threshold for this. Now, what has led to that? Maybe it's an overproduction of red blood cells in his case. Maybe he has a higher percentage of red blood cells than most other individuals, and that's what's helped him prevent that, okay? That's something that would have to be looked at to be understood. But it's kind of interesting. Anyway, so the heart is located in the mediastinum, which is between the second rib and the fifth intercostal space, so between 2 and 5. The anterior two vertebral column is where it is going to be position. It is posterior to the sternum. Your sternum does protect a large portion of your heart. However, there is a portion that does come out this direction. You also have your aorta, which comes up and branches this way. Okay, for you, it is going to branch out into your left arm, is the way your aorta branches. And this is side note, birds and crocodiles goes the opposite way. Okay. So, really interesting to think about. All right, so 2/3 of the heart is left in the midsternal line. The base leans towards your right shoulder, so your heart is running at this angle. And the apex is towards your left hip. So, it is going to sit on the superior surface of the diaphragm. All right, so this has always been a confusing image to me, mainly because it has to be put in perspective. Okay, so if I was actually taking and laying on my back with my feet that way, this is the view you're getting, okay? So you are getting the view so that way you can see how your lungs encase around your pericardial sac, okay? When you cut into your cat, it is fairly easy to see where the heart is. However, once you cut into the heart, you can tell where the atria and ventricles are. Most of the time, when you go to make the cut, it's still kind of hard because the heart's really small. That's why we're going to use sheep heart today, okay? All right. So, looking at this diagram, you can see that the aortic arch is there. Your sternum is going to run right over here. Okay? Your sternum, like I said, does not cover a large portion of your heart. This is the region where, if you're training tactically, that's where people are taught to aim. Okay? But that is because it's the exposed portion. You also, in this region, have the costal cartilages. Okay, the costal cartilages are cartilage. There is no bone protection there, which means that that portion is very vulnerable. So, if you're sitting in an ER and somebody comes in, gunshot wound to the chest, you hope it's not in that region because they're probably not going to do so well. Okay? You would probably rather have a pneumothorax, an actual sucking lung, okay, as opposed to that. All right. So around the heart itself, you are going to have a membrane. This membrane is thick. It is the pericardium. It peri around cardium, around the heart. Okay. So you have a pulmonary trunk that is going to come up and branch to your right and left lungs. Okay. Your parietal pleura is around your lungs. So if you notice, your heart and lungs are in separate pericardial, they're in separate serous membrane sacs. Okay. Your aorta has three branches off of it. In this case, there's one real unique thing, okay? One of the main unique things is that you are going to have one of your arteries that is going to branch directly off your aorta, but that same artery is not going to branch off of, the same artery on the opposite side does not branch off the aorta. We'll talk about it once we get into the actual blood vessels. Okay, so superior vena cava, you also have an inferior vena cava, and you do have a hole through your diaphragm where you are going to run your inferior vena cava and your inferior aorta down through to the rest of your system. Okay, and this individual that is in the bottom right, they were a smoker, okay? So, just throwing that out there. All right, pericardium. So, it's the fibrous pericardium is going to be the membrane that is going to cover it. It is a strong, thick layer of dense connective tissue. It's gonna anchor the heart to the surrounding structures. You have a serous pericardium membrane, which is gonna form from two layers. You have a parietal layer and you have the actual visceral layer. So this is the epicardium. It is just right on top. It's the external surface of the heart. Your pericardial cavity is filled with fluid. Okay? It is filled with serous fluid. And the parietal layer is going to line the internal surface of the fibrous pericardium. Okay, this is the picture. All right. So, in this case, you're going to have, I've always called it the epicardium. Okay, so you're going to have your epicardium, and then you're going to have your pericardial space, which is going to be serous fluid. Okay? And then, above that, you have your parietal layer, and then your pericardium. Okay, so your pericardium is here, is the thick layer on the outside. You also have an endocardium, okay, which I don't think is mentioned in this set of slides. Okay, so the myocardium is the muscle of the heart. So, cardiac muscle is different when you look at it into a slide. It is branching. Okay? If you haven't picked up on it already, it is branching. We went through muscles already, right? So, we've already seen muscle slides twice. This will be the third time. Okay? So, you should be able to identify what cardiac muscle is at this point. If you haven't, you might want to look it up. You might want to take some time on the slide. Okay? There's also something called intercalated disc, which we're going to talk about in here in a minute, which help the firing of the heart muscles to keep them all in sync. Okay? So, it is arranged in circular and spiral patterns. The space between the cells, the intercellular, is going to be filled with connective tissue, endomysium. So, cardiac muscle cells are short and branched. They have mitochondria. Now, this is where things get kind of interesting. Okay. So, don't think I talked about this last time. So, alright, you have your sarcomere. It is the contractile unit of the cell. Okay, the cell itself is one whole muscle fiber. But the sarcomere is that one contractile unit. We're going to get into that contractile unit here, at least today. When you take and look at, this is really close to what the slide that I have in lab looks like, just an FYI. Okay, so they're going to have sarcomeres, a contractile unit. They're going to have T-tubules, just like in the muscle cells that we talked about. The T-tubules are going to contain the calcium. They're going to have sarcoplasmic reticulum, okay? They have less of the T-tubules in sarcoplasmic reticulum than your skeletal muscle. The desmosome is going to hold the cells together. It prevents separation. Gap junctions allows for the ions to pass from cell to cell. Okay, let's see why that's important. So, gap junctions. What's that?
Under mitochondria, the CELSS, is that a misprint?
Yeah, it should be muscle cells.
Oh, cells.
Okay. Yep. My bad. Good catch. I didn't see that. So, all right. Why are gap junctions important? Okay. You have muscle cells that are needing to contract all at the same time. You have nervous tissue. That nervous tissue cannot touch every single cell. So how do you conduct that signal? You conduct that signal through gap junctions, okay, and through cascaded processes. So gap junctions are what allow communication from cell to cell so that way they can all contract at a specific time. Because you want all of the muscle cells in your ventricle to contract when you want them to contract and not when they feel like it. Okay? We good?
So it allows for faster communication.
Yes, it does. Okay. Desmosomes allow for a little bit of give, but they make sure that the cells don't separate. Okay, so they're the springy junction. All right, so layers of the heart. All right, nice little cross section. So you have a dense fibrous layer on the outside. You have your areolar tissue. So you have that areolar connective tissue that we've seen in lab before. Okay, then you're gonna have your mesothelium. So in the middle, meso is the middle. Then you have your pericardial cavity, which has serous fluid in it. Then, on the outside, the next one you're going to have is mesothelium. Okay, again. Then you have your areolar tissue again. Then, you're going to have your myocardial cells. Once you have your myocardial cells, in between you have connective tissue. This is the connective tissue we just talked about. Your endocardium. So, on the inside, you will have endocardium. It's going to be endothelium and areolar tissue. So, it is for your endocardium, simple squamous. So, the endocardium is the lining of the heart. You do not get oxygen from the blood from inside the heart. Okay? You have a coronary circuit. talk about it here in a little bit. Your heart muscle cells are supplied with everything they need from outside the heart. Okay? Not inside. Alright, so your endocardium is going to line the internal walls of the heart and is going to continue the continuation of blood vessel lining. Alright, your atria. This is where blood comes in. The way I've always thought about this is like an atrium in a building. Okay, it's really open. There's not really anything going on. It's kind of got this lovely expanse. Okay, so this is the arriving chambers. You have a pulmonary and systemic circuit. Each one is going to input into the other. So your pulmonary circuit drops into the vent, excuse me, the atrium, and then into the ventricle that is going to go out to the system. And then the system is going to drop back in the pulmonary circuit, which is going to push it out to the lungs, which after it goes to the lungs, is going to come back to the systemic side. Okay? So there's a crossover. It's a lovely figure eight. Alright? So then muscular walls are in your atrium. They do have a muscular wall. It is not nearly as strong as your ventricle. You have auricles. Auricles look like little ears on the heart. So you'll see them. They're extended on the exterior surface. They're little fold extensions on the atrium. They increase the volume. And you are going to have the pectinate muscle or the atrial muscle on the internal surface. So we should put better diagrams in. Okay. So the ventricles, they're going to be the exit and pumping chamber. So basically they're the ones that increase the pressure. This is where your pressure comes from, inside your circulatory system. They control how much. Thick muscular walls. Now, there is a difference in the thickness of the two ventricles. This is what allows you to tell them apart. So, the thickest wall is the left ventricle enamels. Okay? You get into other animals, it's the opposite. But for mammals, the left ventricle, so the one that is on the left side of the person that you're looking at, is going to be the thickest of the two. Let's see. So trabeculae carinae, they're going to be irregular ridges of ventricle wall muscles. The papillary muscles are going to project into the ventricle. These attach to chordae tendinae. Chordae tendinae are going to be attached to the heart valves. This prevents them from inverting. So, what I mean by that is you have this little cord of connective tissue that is running from the valve down into the ventricle. So when the ventricle goes to contract, it can force the pressure out the semilunar valves, okay, and not back up through your atrioventricular valves, your AV valves, okay? If it forces it back up your AV valve, it's going to go right back into your atrium and defeat the whole purpose of contraction. So the papillary muscles are what control the chordae tendinae to prevent that inversion from happening, okay? The right ventricle is going to be the thinner wall and it's going to pump to the lungs. This pumps only to the pulmonary circuit. Left ventricle, 2 to 3 times thicker, and it's going to pump to the whole system. Part of the reason why it's high pressure is because you are going out to the system. The pulmonary circuit is very short. Okay? Alright, so coronary circulation. So the surface features, you are going to have your coronary sulcus. So this coronary sulcus is going to separate the atria from the ventricles on the posterior surface of the heart. So on the backside, you will see the sulcus. your auricles and coronary arteries are going to separate the atria from the ventricles on the anterior surface. And then you're going to have the anterior ventricular sulcus. So the anterior ventricular sulcus is going to mark the right and left ventricles. All right. So, coronary sulcus, okay? So, it's, the sulcus is the groove, okay?
It's not even pointing to.
So, the auricles and coronary arteries. These are your auricles. Coronary arteries. And your interventricular sulcus. So, anterior ventricular surface. Or excuse me, sulcus, my bad. And then the posterior interventricular sulcus is going to be right here. Okay? This is what provides your heart with the circulation. Now, I didn't pay much attention to it not being labeled. So, what I'm going to do, because I want you to look at specific diagrams, I'm going to take those diagrams, post them in the PowerPoint, slap them up there. Okay? So they will be there labeled with what I want you to know. Okay? All right. So, the internal divisions. So you have your atrioventricular valves, your AV valves. They're commonly referred to as your AV valves. They're going to separate your atria from your ventricles. You have your interatrial septum. So between the atria, this is where you find that fossa ovalis. And your interventricular septum is going to mark the right and left ventricles. Okay. So, okay, this is your left ventricle, this is your right ventricle, these are your chordae tendon, okay? This is a semilunar valve. Semilunar valves are curved. Main reason why is because they're meant to prevent back pressure from coming backwards, okay? So once you push it out, you don't want it coming back. So that means that you are looking at an artery when you see a semilunar valve. In this case, it's blue. You would think deoxygenated blood, right? So, yes. But in this case, it's an artery. So artery you usually think of as red. So this is one of the more confusing aspects of these diagrams. So this is your pulmonary artery, which is your pulmonary trunk, which goes to your left pulmonary artery and your right pulmonary artery, which comes out over here. You have your superior vena cava. Your inferior vena cava is going to insert here. This is your right atrium. So you have, bless you, you have all of the blood flowing back into this atrium. Here's your fossa ovalis. Okay? So that is the part where in infancy, so when you're developing as a fetus, you actually have a hole here. Okay? Now, let's see. These are your papillary muscles right here. These papillary muscles are what pull on the chordae tendonate. And this valve structure, because you want to make sure that when this ventricle goes to contract, that blood goes out the semilunar valve here. If it does not go out your pulmonary semilunar valve, it goes back up in your atrium, okay? All right, so this is your interventricular septum, and so this is an AV valve here, and then from here, you are going to have another semilunar valve. This is your systemic semilunar valve, which goes up through your aorta. I'm trying to make sure I don't forget anything that's really important. Alright, we're good. So, valves of the heart are composed of the endocardium with a connective tissue core. The atrial ventricular valves, I've been talking about the AV valves. Okay, these are between the atrium and ventricle. You have two of them. The two that you have is a bicuspid and tricuspid valve. So, I've always remembered it really weird. Okay, so, for some reason I go back to Tarzan on this. So, bicuspid, tricuspid, don't know why. So, bicuspid is on the left side. So, this is the mitral valve. Your right side is your tricuspid valve. Between the atria and ventricles prevents backflow. Part of the system that helps prevent that backflow is the chordae tendineae being pulled on by the papillary muscles. Semilunar valves, their structure is going to help backflow from happening. So, it is between your ventricles and the main arteries taking blood away from the heart, whether it's oxygenated or deoxygenated. Your pulmonary circuit, it is leaving out, but it is deoxygenated, going to get oxygenated, even though it's an artery. So you have a pulmonary and an aortic semilunar valve. The pulmonary is from the pulmonary circuit. This is on the right side of the heart. This is coming out of your weaker ventricle. Your aortic semilunar valve is on the left side, and it's coming out of your stronger ventricle. What's up? Good? Okay. So, yay. All right, so if you take and cut it away, this is part of how you can figure out the naming structures. So your tricuspid valve, there's three lobes to it. Your mitral or your bicuspid valve is going to just have two sides, okay, two of the flaps to the valve. If you've ever seen a miter saw, okay, like an old school box miter saw, it's meant for cutting something straight down the middle, okay? The miter box keeps the saw straight. That's why there's one straight cut down it. That's where it gets the mitral name from. Okay, all right, your semilunar valves, if you notice, they all have three lobes, but if you notice, they have this concave shape. Okay, this concave shape is what helps the blood from flowing back into the ventricle itself. All right, so chordae tendineae in this case illuminated, so I'm pretty sure that this is an artistic rendition. But you can see your chordae tendineae off of the papillary muscle that pulls on them. In this case, the chordae tendineae are here. Your sheep heart, they will be easy to find. Your cat heart, not so much. Okay, that's why we're using the sheep heart, because it's quite a bit bigger. I like cow heart because they're almost like guitar strings. Okay. So your myocardium, if you notice, in the left ventricle is quite a bit larger. You have your intraventricular septum, and then you're going to have your right ventricle, which has less muscle to it. Left atrium, left ventricle, right atrium, right ventricle. Okay? Alright, so heart sounds, the love and dove. Alright, so it is caused by the closure of the heart valves. The lobe is the first sound, which is the AV valves closing. So that means it's trapping the blood into the ventricle. The dove is the second sound, the semilunar valves closing. And a heart murmur is a heart valve disorder. So that is where you get a heart valve that does not function correctly. Either it inverts, depending on the type of murmur it is. Either inverts, the chordae tendineae fail, the papillary muscles aren't strong enough, or you end up having a malformation of the valve where it doesn't actually ever close right. Okay, does that make sense? Good.
How would that? How would the doctor find that out?
The murmur?
Not the murmur, but like if people say, oh, she'll outgrow it, what if they don't? Then what's, what disorder would that, like, what part of the...
More than likely, they'll just group it into murmur. But that used to be the case. I don't know if they've started coming up with specifics anymore. But the... So with the... With the murmur, the first way that they go through and diagnose it usually is an echocardiogram. Basically, they're either coming in with an EKG or, in my case, they ended up actually going through. So they, I don't have a heart murmur, but in grad school, I was drinking too much caffeine and caused me to have heart issues, and they thought I was going to have a heart attack. So... they go in first with an EKG, figure out if they can find abnormality in your actual track. Then for me, they turn around and they said, okay, now you're gonna wear it for 48 hours, and then you're gonna come back and you're gonna get an ultrasound. And so then they hit me with an ultrasound. They could actually watch the valves opening and closing. So based on that video of the valves opening and closing, they could determine what was happening. There's an inversion of the valve, they could see. If, and I was watching the screen as she was doing it, it was kind of cool. But they can physically see if the valve is inverting or not, depending on how good their ultrasound is. Does that answer your question? So that's, now it's gotten to a point to where we don't have to open it up at all. We don't have to do anything. Like, we can actually figure out exactly what's going on before we go in. All right. So, stethoscope placement. So, if you are using a stethoscope, there are a couple places where you can place it. You have your aortic semilunar valve. So, this is the second intercostal space. So, the second space right at the top. So, the secondary intercostal space is just to the right of the sternum. Then you're going to have your pulmonary semilunar valve, which is left of the sternum. Same place, second intercostal space. You have your mitral valve, which is going to be the fifth intercostal space, and your tricuspid, which is the fifth. This is because you are trying to figure out, if you're using four points of contact, you're trying to figure out which valve is causing issues or where you might have issues. This is more old school, getting into the new stuff. If it seems like it's going more and more to where if they can use their new toys, they want to. So they gotta pay for them somehow, right? All right, so blood flow through the heart. All right, it's gonna come in through your vena cava. Okay, that's plural for vena cava. So vena cava, it will come in and it will drain into your right atrium. From there, it's gonna flow through your actual AV valve, your right AV valve. When it flows through the right AV valve, it is going to end up in the right ventricle. From there, it's going to be pushed out through your pulmonary semilunar valve. After it goes out through your pulmonary semilunar valve, it's going to go through your pulmonary trunk and out to your lungs. From your lungs, it will then take and make its way into your left atrium. From your left atrium, it will end up flowing into your left ventricle. So left atrium, left ventricle. Then it will be pushed out through your aorta, which is the highest pressure point in your circulation system. Okay, your aorta, if for any reason anything happens to your aorta, you usually do not have very long to stop the bleeding in that area because it is so high pressure. Okay. All right. So I think I've just about covered all of that. Most of this is physiology. I suggest you look over where, what is as far as oxygen, carbon dioxide, and its energy. Okay. So physiology of the heart, systems that control contraction of the heart muscles, intrinsic conducting system, which is a nodal system. Okay. Yeah, we're gonna get the notes here in a second. So Autorhythmicity. So this is your pacemaker cells in this case. The pacemaker cells are non-contractile cells that spontaneously depolarize. So these pacemaker cells can keep the heart on pace by themselves, okay? Contractile cells, they're responsible for contraction. They are all myocardial sites that contract as a unit. None of them, if it's an all or none contraction, okay? It ensures the effective pumping action. So this being an all or none, the way it's controlled is like a synapse. You put enough inputs in, it's gonna contract. If you don't, it's not gonna contract. Intrinsic conducting system. So you do have your extrinsic conducting system in your medulla oblongata, which is going to control the rate of the contraction of your heart. So, sequence of excitation. So your cardiac pacemaker cells pass impulses in the following order across the heart in 0.22 seconds. So you have your SA node, your sinoatrial node. It is in the right atrial wall. Your atrioventricular node is going to be between your atria and ventricular. It is the inferior interatrial septum. So it is actually further down. Your atrioventricular bundle. This used to be called the bundle of His, H-I-S, okay? I still refer to it as that myself. So the bundle of His in this case is going to be where you have this neural bundle in the superior interventricular septum. The bundle of His is basically where that signal is separated and spread out. The right and left bundle branches is going to be in the interventricular septum, and that's what's going to send the signal out in that region. This is where you start to actually get signals sent out. Your Purkinje fibers, okay, named after the guy who found them. So, subendocardial conducting network. So, these complete the pathway through the interventricular septum and out to the apex and then up the ventricle walls. So, Purkinje fibers are what go down and around, okay? Here we go. All right, so your SA node is here in your right atrium, okay? Then you're gonna have your AV node. So this sends a signal to your AV node. If for any reason your SA node gets damaged, your AV node can take over, okay? Along with pacemaker cells. However, your heart's gonna beat at a slower rate, okay? So it's a secondary backup. Now, after this, so after your AV node, you are going to take and move down to the bundle of His. The bundle of His is where it branches, okay? Beyond that, then you're going to have your bundle branches, your right and your left, okay? So right bundle branch, left bundle branch, still the patients, keep that in mind. Then once you hit right about here, this is generally the line where it says that these are Purkinje fibers now. The Purkinje fibers are going to stimulate the contractile cells of both ventricles, okay? All right, so yeah. All right, you can, if you're careful, sometimes find your bundle of His, okay, and your notes in your heart, if you're careful. Okay. All right, so the intrinsic conducting system. It's time for me to take a break again, right? Why am I crazy?
I don't know, but I needed one.
Yeah, we're going to take one. So, 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Sorry, I get caught up in this. So.
Well, we have 47 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes, and then you come back and kill this one off.